Okay, so we will be I'll be preaching Advent sermons starting. I'm actually not going to be here next week. I have a sermon from video that I'm going to be that's going to be played in my place. It's a great one for the first Sunday of Advent. I really appreciate it. It talks about the tension, and it actually is based on the verse on our wall over here. So it's really fitting. But it talks about living in tension between where we are and where things are happening. Where we left off the last time I was here was with Joseph in prison, and that's where we're going to go back to. Joseph in prison on false sexual assault charges, and he had been accused by his boss's wife of trying to rape her, and his boss was angry, if you remember correctly, and he was put in prison. So we're going to go back and read briefly on Genesis 39, and then I'm going to get to the meat of the sermon today, which is dreams, or I could have called it from the pit to the palace is the right word, if I can speak, which is what this sermon is often called. So let's go back to Genesis 39, verse 16. She kept his cloak. By the way, this kept his cloak will fit into two other things that we're going to talk about today, Jesus and Bonhoeffer. So that's kind of the combination. She kept Joseph's cloak with her until his master came home. She told him this story. Your Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me, but as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him, put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him and showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he made him responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. I mentioned briefly last time that Potiphar was angry. But again, most people don't believe that he was angry because he believed his wife, but rather because he believed that his wife was lying, but he knew that he was in a trap and that he had to do something. And so instead of executing Joseph, he placed Joseph in prison. Which is kind of sad for me in some ways if that is really true. And again, we don't know, absolutely convinced that it's true. But he lost Joseph, his trusted employee, slave, and ended up with a wife that he probably didn't appreciate at this point. And they had some issues that they had to work through. The other thing that I want to point out is that what you see is that Joseph's life is a series of ups and downs right now. He goes from being the favorite in his father's household to being rejected by his brothers and placed in a pit. He gets out of the pit. He becomes a slave. He goes to Potiphar's house, and he goes to become from there to what? Being the most trusted person in the household. And then he ends up in prison. He ends up in prison, and he becomes the most trusted person in the prison, and he becomes the administrator of the prison. Joseph is going up and down, up and down, up and down. Now, the other thing that I want to point out is that every one of those places, not at his home, other than if you consider it the dreams, what we read is it's not because Joseph was great, but it was because the Lord was with him and granted favor. So what we see is that the Lord has his hand on Joseph's life, and he's preparing Joseph for a greater purpose, but we don't know what that, Joseph doesn't know what that purpose is. We do, because we know the end of the story. But God is preparing Joseph to be a great administrator to run a country. He just doesn't know it, but he practices first. He has Joseph practice in a household, then a prison, and soon to be a country. Now, the other thing that I want to point out, only because Joseph is seen as a type of Christ, is that Joseph was perfect in the face of temptation like Jesus. He was stripped of his garment and paid the price of someone else's sins. In that way, we get to see the foretelling of Jesus in that same sense. Now, again, some people will point out, man, when you guys get into Joseph's type of Christ, you guys pick out everything, and can that really be true? But isn't it interesting that this happened, that he was stripped of his outer garment and went to pay the price for someone else's sins while he was innocent? Okay, let's turn to chapter 40. Again, I like the way it starts out. I don't like the way it starts out. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with these two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in the custody in the house of the captain of the guard. By the way, who's the captain of the guard? Potiphar. Potiphar. So he goes to Potiphar and he says, hey, I got these two guys that I don't like and I want them to be put in prison. And they were confined where? In the same prison that Joseph was. We should read this. Potiphar assigned them to Joseph and he attended to them. If Potiphar had actually believed that Joseph was a sex offender and had assaulted his wife, would he really do this? He trusts Joseph. He remembers who Joseph is at. And he says, hey, I want these two men, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and I want them under Joseph's care because I know this man and I trust this man. This is where special prisoners should go. After they had been in custody for some time, I love the Bible just puts some time. Joseph, you all, just struggling in prison. Nothing's happening. He's just sitting there. Sometime later. Each of the men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, were held in prison. They had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. When Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected, so he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in his master's house, why do you look so sad today? We both had dreams, they answered, but there's no one to interpret them. Then Joseph said to them, Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. He said to them, in my dream I saw a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed, and its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand. I took the grapes, and I squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup and put the cup in his hand. This is what it means, Joseph said to him. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head, restore you to your position, and you will put Potiphar's cup in his hands, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. When all goes well with me, you all, I love this statement. But when all goes well with you, remember me and show kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even when I had done nothing to deserve it, I was put in a dungeon. We'll come back to that verse because that's a critical verse. When the chief bearer saw that Joseph had been given a favorable interpretation, he said to Joseph, I too had a dream. On my head was three baskets of bread. In the top basket were all kinds of baked goods for the Pharaoh, but the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head. This is what it means, Joseph said. 3 days. Three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift your head and impale your body on a pole, and the birds will eat away your flesh. On the third day was Pharaoh's birthday. What a birthday party. And he gave the feast of all of his officials. He lifted the head of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker in the presence of the officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position so once again he put the cup in Pharaoh's hand. He impaled the chief baker just as Joseph had said in his interpretation. And only as in Joseph's story, the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He had forgotten him. So here we are. Sometime later, we don't know how long that was, years, a couple years, couldn't have been more than a couple years, but a length of time. And the theory goes that the cupbearer and the baker were probably imprisoned because of some plot to kill Pharaoh. Most likely some kind of poisoning, because it's the cupbearer and the baker. And so there's some kind of theory that that they were going to poison him with some kind of food attempt or something along that line. But again, we don't know. And as I mentioned, Potiphar said, hey, I want these two guys under Joseph's care. So they're under Joseph's care. And one day Joseph comes to them. I don't know, he might have been sleeping in a different part of the prison, but he comes to them and he notices that they're both sad. Now, The one thing I'll say about this, Joseph in his imprisonment, and he could have grown bitter and cold, but he's not. He notices they're sad. He's still focused on other people. But he's not just focused on other people, as we learn in the statement he made later. But he notices that they're sad, and he goes to them and he says, "Why are you sad today?" And they say, "Hey, we had dreams last night, and we don't know what they mean." Dreams were very important to the Egyptians. They were a way into their spirit world. And again, I only know this because of my job, but Freud used a lot of these theories about dreams in his interpretation of dreams. They came straight from the Egyptian theories of dreams. Dreams were particularly important for the Egyptians during this time. They had magicians, which weren't people that pulled rabbits out of little hats. They were people that foretell the meanings of dreams, and we're going to hear about them later. And if you remember Moses, they come up in that story too. And they said, "We don't have anybody to interpret our dreams." And Joseph says what? Isn't the interpretation of dreams God's task? It's not the spirit world. It is the spirit world. But I follow a God who can answer all the dreams. Now, of course, Joseph was a person who was familiar with dreams. He had two dreams. He angered his family by telling the dreams. He was called the dreamer. All dreams everywhere. God spoke to people in the Bible numerous times by dreams. Interestingly enough, in the Bible, God speaks to non-believers twice as often through dreams as he does believers. If you read through the Old Testament, twice as often he spoke to non-believers than he did to believers through dreams. As some of you may know who follow Muslim outreach, one of the big ways that God is reaching Muslims today is through dreams about Jesus that Muslims are having, independent of anything else that any missionaries who might be there. Now, would I base my life on a dream I had? Probably not, you all. I mean, I have lots of crazy dreams, and I'd be doing a lot of weird stuff if I followed my dreams that I had at night. I do not recommend that you base your life seriously on a dream unless it's confirmed someplace else. So please don't start basing your life on dreams. Can God speak through dreams? Yes, he can. But so can a bad supper, worries that you have, and so many other things that can cause us to dream what we have. By the way, what's the number one thing that people dream about? Trying to complete a task that you just can't complete. You're next day you're trying to do something, you're trying and trying, and everything you do messes up, or it goes bad, or you just can't quite get it. I guess that's the story of life. Or at least that's our fear. Now, so they tell him their dreams, and the chief cupbearer tells him his dream, and he says, "Hey, I have this vine, it has three branches on it, they bud, boom, cluster, bake, grapes, boom, wine, give it to the king," the Pharaoh. Now, some of you would say, "Well, that's a pretty easy dream to interpret. It's a lot easier to say that once we know the meaning of the dream. Three vines, 3 days." Could be, although I think God gave Joseph the interpretation here rather than just common sense. The other thing I'll say, it was a risky interpretation because in 3 days everybody would know whether Joseph was lying or whether he was not. Right? So the cupbearer is excited and so is the baker. 3 days, he's getting out of prison. He's going to be back at his old job. I love what does the butler say there or the baker say there? He basically says he's excited. He gives you the idea that he's excited about it. Verse 16, when the chief baker saw that Joseph had been given a favorable interpretation, he said to Joseph, "I too had a dream." I can just hear the excitement. "I'm so excited. I had a dream too. It's going to be good stuff." Reminds me this week, I had a young lady in my office. I've been seeing her for about a year, and she came in and she told me, "I've decided to tell you something I haven't told you for a whole year." And she was so pumped. I thought she was going to tell me something that she didn't, because her grandfather had called me and he said, "Hey, this is what's going on. This is what my granddaughter is probably going to tell you." That was not the secret she told me. As she shared her excitement about the secret she told me, my heart began to sink, because I knew that I had to do something that would cause her life to be difficult, her family's life to be difficult. And so she's excited. I'm sad because I know what I got to do. And I wonder if that's the way Joseph felt as he heard this interpretation. I don't know how much courage By the way, I had to follow through in what I did. I got many angry phone calls and messages from the family after that. Things did turn around, I think, afterwards, and I got a nice message. Things, I hope, will work out okay. But I wonder how hard it was for Joseph to give this interpretation that he had to give. He had to tell the baker that, what? Hey, you got 3 days to live. At the end of those 3 days, the king, the Pharaoh's going to call you. He's going to cut off your head. He's going to execute you, and the birds will eat your body. It's so much nicer to give the first message than the second message. But Joseph stands through with both of them, and he delivers both of the messages. But I want to go back to that verse before we go on to what happens. To the verse where Joseph says to the cupbearer, what? But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even when I had done nothing to deserve being put in the dungeons. You all, Joseph is human. He knows that God is in prison with him, but he doesn't want to be in prison. He's willing to accept God's will, but he's not just passive saying, I'm going to be in prison and I'm going to rot in prison and there's nothing I can do about it. He is discouraged, but not fatalistic. He is not bitter, but he says, hey, if you can remember me and get me out of here, that would be great. And he says what? I'm falsely in prison. My brothers falsely accused me of things and sold me as a slave. And so therefore, he balances. He lives in a state of, what, tension, where he's able to say, I'm here with God, but I don't like where I am, but I know that God is with me. It's a reminder to us that we should not get too caught up on our circumstances, but we just don't have to accept our circumstances either. It's this balancing act between trusting God and moving forward at the same time. And oh, that's hard. It's also is how we acknowledge the pains and our hurts in our life and the disappointments while continuing to trust God at the same time. Joseph is not in denial of what's happened to him, but he's willing to accept what has happened to him in a different way. It's an example to us about how we can be honest with where we are in life and not let our circumstances define us, but decide how do we work with the circumstances to get us where God wants us to be. 3 days later, there's a party, there's the feast for Pharaoh's birthday. He calls the chief cupbearer and the chief baker up. He brings them up in front of the people, and he restores the cupbearer and kills the baker, just like Joseph said. I'm assuming, I don't know this again, but I'm assuming that the baker was involved in the plot to kill Pharaoh, and the cupbearer was not, but again, we don't know. Like Jesus, Joseph walked among, as an innocent person, lived in prison with people who were guilty. He brings God's message, the good news, to one, but not the other. The difference between Joseph, just like Jesus, comes and walks among us like we're in prison to sin, and he brings the good news. But you all, the good news of Jesus is better than the good news of Joseph, because the good news of Joseph was only true for the innocent, the cupbearer. The good news of Jesus is what? He brings freedom and restoration to us as the guilty people. Jesus trumps Joseph in that he brings the good news, which is, by the way, we often in this story will put ourselves in the place of Joseph, but we're really the baker. We're the guilty one. We're the one that sinned. But the good news is Jesus brings and says, hey, even though you're guilty, I will set you free. I will die in your place. I am the one who will what? Be put on a pole. I am the one who will bring grace to you. And because it's Joseph, the cupbearer forgets him. Chapter 41. When 2 full years have passed, 2 full years. I'm sure Joseph thought of every single one of those years. Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile when out of the river there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. Such a beautiful Egyptian dream. The Nile, the reeds, the cows that would have always been in the river, grazing among the reeds. And after them, 7 other cows, ugly, gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood there beside the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate the 7 sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again and had his second dream. 7 heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing up out of a single stalk. Then 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind, which again is the famous Egyptian east wind that when it comes brings famine and brings failed crops. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up and it had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled. So he sent for all his magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dream and no one could interpret them for him. Then the cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servant and he imprisoned him and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dreams. And things turned out exactly as he had interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position and the other man was impaled." So Pharaoh sent for Joseph and he quickly brought him from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream and no one could interpret it, but I have heard it said that when you have a dream, you can interpret it." "I can't do it," Joseph replied to Pharaoh, "but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "In my dream, I was standing on the banks of the Nile, and when out of the river up came 7 cows, fat, sleek, and they were grazing among the reeds. And then 7 other cows came up, scrawny and very ugly and lean. I had never seen such ugly cows in all the land of Egypt. The lean, ugly cows ate the 7 fat cows that came up first, and then even after they ate them, no one could tell what they had done, as they looked just as ugly as before." I wonder how they looked. And then I woke up. In my dream, I saw 7 heads of grain, full and good, growing on a single stalk. And then 7 other heads sprouted and withered and thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed the 7 good heads. I told this to my magicians, but none of them could explain this to me. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. 7 good cows are 7 years, and 7 good heads of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream. The 7 lean and ugly cows came up after the 7 years, and so are the 7 worthless heads of grain scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered because the famine that follows it will be so severe. The reason the dreams have been given to Pharaoh in 2 forms is the matter has been firmly decided by God. God will do it soon. Joseph goes on and gives, that's the interpretation of the dreams. Here's my advice to you. "And now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man, put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these good years that are coming, store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to keep in the cities for food. The food shall be held in reserve for the country and to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the so that the country may not be in ruin by the famine. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and his officials, so Pharaoh asked them, could we find anyone like this man, one whom is God's in the spirit of God? Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one as discerning as wise as you. You shall be placed in my palace, and all the people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. Okay, so after 2 years, no release from prison, Joseph is in there. He's waiting. You all remember, God's sense of time is different than ours. One day is like 1,000 years, which is kind of scary. We hate to wait, but God doesn't. We have to wait a lot longer in life for things than we think. Now, to go back for a second, the cupbearer and the baker were in prison historically because they plotted against the Pharaoh. But God brought them in there because he knew that he had a plan for Joseph and that he needed the cupbearer to meet Joseph for the moment that we're going to read about. Because this is Joseph's big job interview. This has all been set up so that Joseph can have his big interview, and I don't think that Joseph knew that he was interviewing for the big job. I don't think that when he told Pharaoh his plan, he thought, oh, I'm setting this up so that I'm the answer to Pharaoh's needs. Maybe, but I don't think God revealed that to Pharaoh, to Joseph. That would have been very out of the ordinary for this story if Joseph would have known that. Now, let's go back to the dreams. By the way, Pharaoh makes a big deal about how ugly these cows are. I don't know what... I would have loved to see these cows, to know what ugly cows look like. I mean, I've seen some ugly cows, but these must... Tom can show us some, that's right. So Tom, you would know ugly cows, right? So if you could imagine Tom's ugliest cows that he've ever seen and multiply that by two, that's how ugly these cows were. Now, they're the same dream, right? 7 years, seven, whatever. Now, I love that when he tells the story the first time, we don't get to know that the ugly cows ate the fat cows and they were still ugly. We get that in the second story, which is a critical piece here, but we don't get that the first time. I also love that the Bible points out that Joseph, when he was called from prison, what did he do? Shaved and changed his clothes. What? Why do we get to know that? He's got to look nice for his interview, doesn't he? He's been in prison for how long? The other theory is that as a Hebrew, he would have had a beard. Egyptians didn't wear beards. So in honor of the king, he shaved off his beard so that he went to Pharaoh. He wouldn't offend Pharaoh because he was a Hebrew with a beard. I try to imagine this always as somebody who's Amish who shaves off his beard to meet the president. We don't know for sure, but isn't it weird that the Bible points out that he shaved? I mean, people do that every day. And maybe he just never shaved in prison. He had a beard. You know, some people, when they go to prison, they wear their beard until they get out just to kind of demonstrate the length of time. I don't know. The other thing that a couple things I want to point out here. While Joseph was in prison and nothing was happening, God was changing his character. All of that waiting in prison was about changing who Joseph was. We often read Romans 8:28, which says, we know that all things God works for good for those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. But we often don't quote verse 30, verse 29. For those God foreknow, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, so that they may be firstborns among their brothers and sisters. Who's the firstborn? Who becomes the firstborn here? Joseph. Was he the firstborn? He was to Jacob's favorite wife. But he wasn't historically, he wasn't positionally the firstborn that should have been the firstborn. That should have been Reuben. But God transforms us what? Into the image of his son so that we may become firstborns among our brothers and sisters. What God was doing in those years that Joseph was waiting and waiting and waiting was conforming him into the image of his son, who Joseph wouldn't have known because Christ wasn't around at that time. But that transformational process was happening. He had to wait a long time to be transformed. I guess the question that we need to be asking ourselves is, what is God transforming us into while we wait? What is the vision that God has for you? And I don't know. I've thought a lot lately because, as some of you know, I quit my job and then started a new life. And one of the things that's interesting when I think about that, when I think about all the things that have led up to where I am and what I'm doing now, which, I mean, this week was not fun given the situation that I got myself into, but I love what I'm doing in a new way. Another thing that happened, too many things happen in a week, but I had another situation where another family I'm working with, where the Amish couple who has a lot of cord entanglements right now for a whole variety of service, but you know, because I am in this weird position where I am a licensed professional working in a world that doesn't have many professionals, guess what? The judge said, hey, you can see Chuck because he's licensed. Otherwise, she would have had to go to somebody that wouldn't have been trusted among the Amish. And I get to see her and walk with her during these 5 years of court-ordered counseling that I wouldn't have otherwise. The other day, I got a call from a court official in Cumberland County, and they were working with an Eastern family. And I don't want to say anything about Eastern people. The Lord loves them. But they're difficult to work with in the mental health profession. And so they said, this family won't work with us, but we heard of you. And do you think they would trust you to work with them? Called them up, didn't know what they would do, and they agreed to work with me. I mean, those were fun, but I think about all the things that I had to go through to get to where I'm here. Grew up in the way that I did. Twyla and I were living in Michigan. Had a really difficult situation at work there. I quit my job there. It was hard. And nowadays, given who I was 32 years old, I would have stayed and fought. But I didn't fight back then because that's just not who I was. I quit the job. We moved to Pennsylvania. I did not like Pennsylvania when I showed up here. It was hard. You know, I had moved away from home in Michigan when I was 18, couldn't wait to get out. And then we moved back there, Twyla and I did, and I loved it. I wanted to stay there for the rest of my life. After Twyla convinced me we can't move every 2 years. And so we moved out here, and it was really hard. Those first years when I came here in 96 were tough for me. And then I got to work at Philhaven, and something happened there that was very much like what happened in Michigan. And I thought, I'm not cut out to do this work. I need to quit and move away, do something different. That time, I felt like I had to stay and fight through that, and I fought through that, and it turned out to be okay. But then I ended up teaching for all those years, and now I'm back, but doing counseling again full time. But the thing that's so different is I am so different than the person who I was at 32 who came to Pennsylvania. And I don't know about why all those things happened to me the way they did in Michigan and when I came here to work at Philhaven. But I do think the Lord was preparing me for what I'm doing now with the people that I'm doing now. There's very few people who have the background and the professional experience to do what I'm doing. Would have I ever guessed that I'm doing this? Absolutely not. To be surrounded by that many coverings again sometimes is shocking. Although I will say this, there's an amazing comfort that comes with it now that I would have never had before. That was a long story I did not mean to tell. Sorry about that. But what I now look back and I look at all those years and all those struggles that I had and all those doubts that I had and all those questions about what I'm supposed to do, it feels like, wow, God, you had a plan that was bigger than mine that I never imagined would ever happen. That's what happened to Joseph. In those years, he got transformed into a different person. When Pharaoh comes to him and he says to him, hey, I need somebody to interpret the dream. He doesn't say, remember that kind of cocky young kid he was who presented his dreams? He now says what? Hey, that's not me that interprets the dream. It's God. And Pharaoh tells him his dreams. And again, this is this big, big interview. And he says, God's going to do this. He showed you this dream twice because this is what God is going to do. We got to come up with somebody. You got to come up with somebody who can help you. He lays out what he's doing. It would not be a great political platform to run on. It's estimated that at that time, Pharaoh took 10% of people's food as taxes. What did Joseph recommend? Doubling the tax. His tax rate is going to go up twice. He says, hey, Pharaoh, tax him at 20%, a fifth of everything. His campaign rally would be, double your taxes, 20% for all. Not a great political campaign, right? Depends on your political philosophy, I guess. But he's saying that we need to have somebody who come in who takes 20% of the grain, store it up, so that when that famine comes through and those lean, ugly cows are here, and they're going to be so bad it's going to destroy our memories of those good, sleek, fat, healthy-looking cows. We need all that in grain. I try to imagine the granaries and the storage facilities that Egypt would have had to build to store the grain that they store. Where did they store all that? I'm assuming that's a dry, not humid climate with little rain. Did they just put it out in big heaps? Wasn't there a couple of years ago that over here, Cargill or whatever that place is, didn't they just put some crop out in the field? What was that they put out there? You altered it. What was it? Soybeans. I don't know how many of you saw that big mountain of soybeans out there. My heart twittered a lot when I went by there thinking, that would make me nervous if I had all my soybeans out there like that. Where did Egypt put all that stuff? I don't know. These are things that sometimes keep me up at night, but it's way past what I need to be responsible for. But it would be a lot. Now, Pharaoh hears the plan and he says what? Where am I going to find, he says to his officials, where am I going to find someone who and whom is the Spirit of God? Now, you all, in your version of the Bible, it's capitalized G, but that's not the way Pharaoh said it. He said it in the spirit of the gods. He didn't mean God, Jehovah, Yahweh. He meant any God. So he's not saying, hey, Joseph, I know that you are God and God chose you, and so therefore I want you because of Yahweh. He's just saying you have the spirits of God, a God within you. Now, was that his first hint that he wanted, though, Joseph to be his commissioner? Probably. But then he says to Pharaoh, hey, God's made this known to you. This is big G God. God made this known to you, so let's appoint you to be that person. I am going to make you second in command of Egypt. The only person who will be greater than you is me. It seems like Joseph's story turned around in a moment, and he was suddenly what? An overnight success. But we know, if we follow the story, that Joseph was not an overnight success. He struggled and struggled for years. And it wasn't because Joseph pulled himself up by his own bootstraps, but it was only because God was with him in every step of the way. And the lesson of Joseph's story is not to say, hey, pull yourself up from the bootstraps and you will have overnight success. It's no, let God transform you slowly over the years through suffering and pain so that you can be in the right place at the right time to be used by God when God wants you to be used by Him. That's the lesson of Joseph. It's not, hey, be successful, but no, be submissive and being willing to suffer and experience pain in order to be transformed into the image of his son. That's the journey we're on. That's where we're going. We are, if we allow ourselves, if we don't allow ourselves to become bitter with the disappointments of life, which we all face. Life is hard. There's good times. That's why we keep going. But there's pain. God uses that to make us better, to make us to be like his son. Again, remember, what did the New Testament say? In suffering, Jesus was perfected. One last point before we close. Again, I love types of Christ, so you're going to get one more. Joseph, the man who was despised and rejected by his brothers, sold into slavery, became chosen by God to bring salvation to those very people. Joseph was called ahead of his brothers to go into Egypt to provide a way of salvation and to do what, you all? Prepare a place so that they could come and live with him. Isn't that cool? Joseph is a type of Christ who is showing us, hey, just like you do to Jesus, it happened to Joseph. He's rejected by his own. His own could not receive him, and yet he becomes the one who is chosen to go ahead, provide a way of salvation, and to prepare a place so that you can come and live with me in a land that's so different than where Jacob and his other brothers were living. So cool. Sorry if you don't get as excited about it as I. That just makes me excited. Let's pray. Father, we do thank you for Joseph's reminder for what we can become and who you've called us to be. Father, thank you so much that you know where you want us to be. Father, forgive us when we shake our fist at you and say, God, what are you doing this for to me? Because it's hard sometimes, God, when we don't know the final outcome, to hang on to the truth that you have a greater place for us. And sometimes we get discouraged and we go our own ways, and sometimes we even walk away from you. Thank you for your patience and your willingness to tolerate us in that state. Thank you that you don't openly reject us, even though sometimes I can't help but think you must roll your eyes. But probably not. But I know I would. Father, thank you for that. I just ask that you would continue to walk with us as we become transformed and we become more and more of what you have for us. Thank you in your name. Amen.